And you have, of course, many, many memories, but you have these wonderful letters that your father wrote. Here we are in 2012 in February, and not too long ago you released the book, Bud Wilkinson's Letters to His Sons, that you saved. Bill Cosby has a word on here, a timeless guide for all of us. He wrote these letters. He was a profuse writer.
Well, he was. He was very eloquent, very articulate, very prolific in the letters. And I mention in this book that I know I lost far more letters than I kept. There's no rhyme or reason why certain letters were kept and others were lost or discarded. My brother Pat lost all of his letters, too. But the reader can certainly understand that he took a great deal of time to support and encourage and provide guidance and love for a son who was homesick and lonesome and adjusting to a new phase of life.
And he was so detailed in his writing. It was amazing. We were talking about the presidential appointment. I have a problem which is surprising and difficult. Yesterday, a man named Ted Reardon called me from the White House. That wasn't his first part of that letter, Winning Habit. He was several pages into this before he finally brought that up.
That might seem unusual, but that is very much him. And you're absolutely correct. That's a major, major appointment from the president. And he doesn't bring it up until he's asked me several questions.
He was so nurturing. We received your grades from Duke. Truly proud. You should be too. Keep up the good work. We'll talk to you soon. Love always, Dad. Would these letters come once a week? Or
I think the normal routine would be, and sometimes you can see in some of the periods in 62, they were more frequent than even once a week. But I would say once a week was a natural flow of the letters. And I was writing him. In many of the letters you'll see, he'll begin the letter by saying, "We received your fine letter today." My brother Pat and I were corresponding back and forth with him and with my mother as well.
In a letter of February 61, "Thirst for Knowledge," he says, "Don't be concerned about your football. The reason you practice is to improve, to learn to execute better." Why was he writing that?
Well, because of my concern about both academics and athletics at Duke. He was just giving me a pep talk, I think, about what it took to be successful in both areas.
But here he is giving you some detailed information. He says, "When you come up on defense, don't even think about playing off the blockers. Come up so fast with so much determination to get the ball that your speed and aggressiveness will carry you through or past the blockers. Try this and see how it works."
Yeah, and that's true. That's a very good point. Believe me, there are other references on football. I'd say more of our discussion about football had to do with the intangibles, about character and heart and about the will to win and about being honest and truthful with your teammates, subordinating your ego for the team, those kinds of themes.
Of course, this book has his letters, but you have your comments. You said Dad understood the importance of the brand.
Well, I think he recognized early on that if the University of Oklahoma football team was successful, that brand in itself would be very meaningful to the university. And it would carry over not only to the football program, but to all sports and to the academic community as well. I think it's a true statement that the Sooner success, and I think it's been just absolutely extraordinary that it was maintained and it continued through both Coach Switzer and Coach Stoops, but I think what he recognized many, many years ago has happened, that there is that brand identification of what it means to be a Sooner because of the consistency of success.
You're writing in the book that at halftime of the Colorado game in Boulder in 1956, tell us what he told the players.
Well, I was not there, but basically they just come off a 40-0 victory over Notre Dame in South Bend, and they were behind 19-6 at halftime. So they were in great jeopardy playing up in Boulder. They had great athletes that year. Dad allegedly, when he went in the locker room, told the players that he was very displeased with their effort, and he said, "You've got to remember all the people who came before you to make this tradition what it was, and I don't really think you're living up to their standards, so you might want to just take off your red and white jerseys because you're not living up to their ideals." And then he left the locker room and didn't come back until maybe 3 or 4 minutes before they went out. He and I have talked about this. He said to them, "There are 60,000 people out there in the Folsom Field Stadium, and there's not one of them that thinks you can win. There's only one person that does, and that's me." So taking them, you know, from the low to the high, and then they went out and defeated Colorado 27-19. I think he had an uncanny ability to know when and what to say. A lot of the players used to say before games he was well known for really inspiring and motivating the players. I can't remember who told me this, but several of them, when you were a sophomore, you're ready to literally run through a brick wall because you're so fired up. When you're a junior, you're still motivated and fired up, but maybe you've heard it a little bit. And then when you're a senior, you're just watching the sophomores to see how they're reacting because they're going to get so ready to go. It was my mom that told me, I never did ask my dad this, but she said in Norman before home games that on Friday he would drive out into the country, and he had a special place where he would park up on a hill. There are not a lot of hills in the Norman areas, we know, but he would look down and he would, at that time, just contemplate his motivational message that he was going to give the team. He always knew that that was so very important, and you can't say the same thing. You have to come up with different ways, and so take off your red and white jerseys because you're not living up to the standards of the guys that made that. That's a powerful statement.
Yeah. As much attention we're giving your father and these letters, I think maybe you referenced earlier, your mother, too, would write letters.
Oh, yes. I think she wrote just as frequently as my dad did. I don't remember her letters being as long, but certainly very caring. Another thing that I think is so unusual about these letters of my dad is it shows his depth of knowledge, how he was at ease in discussing anything beyond football. He's quoting people like the poet William Wordsworth and the Harvard University president, William James, the philosopher, and Shakespeare, Douglas MacArthur, and Lincoln, and Ralph Waldo Emerson. And what I found astounding was that he wasn't just quoting them, he was using them to make a very relevant point. He had this just uncanny, diverse depth of knowledge. He was really a bright guy.
Well, he was then obviously doing continual education because it wasn't just what he'd learned at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, no, that's a great point, John. He bought a series of books that I do reference in the book, and I know that he studied. These were the classics, and he studied them and wrote notes. So he was a continuous learner.
Yeah. He would join you in reading. You were reading Preface to Philosophy.
Yes.
He would read along with you.
Well, he did. And then he would not only do that, he would write me in a letter and maybe quote William James. In this instance, the quote meaning that if a young person kept busy every day, became diligent and really worked at something, that he would someday wake up and be a very confident and successful person. He would have learned the judgment that would be needed to be successful.
There's a letter here. The first losing season for your father, you felt you should go home and actually be with him.
Yeah, I felt a degree of guilt. I couldn't have played that year as a freshman, but I think I had a great opportunity to contribute to his program because I think I naturally played the quarterback position well because I had been trained to do it. And I felt a degree of guilt, and I wanted to help him. J.D. Roberts, the great Outland Trophy winner from the University of Oklahoma, who also coached with my dad, at the time that Duke had defeated Navy, where J.D. was an assistant coach, it was following that game that I went up to him on the playing field at Duke and told him that I was really concerned and thought maybe I should go back to OU. J.D. gave me a real quick but stern, no, you made the right decision, you should be here. Coach Wilkinson is going to do very well, whether he's winning or losing, and he was right. My dad can handle it very easily. J.D. was very helpful to me at that time.
Because you could have chosen to stay. I believe your brother Pat pretty much said, no, you must leave.
Right.
But then I think your father left it up to staff and all and yourself to make that decision.
He made it a little tougher on me because I think that the other assistant coaches persuaded him that I really did have the athletic ability to help the team. So you're correct. Dad did say to me, I don't think you should stay here, but if you choose to do so, I will let you do that. It was not that I had any real interest in Duke University. It just so happened that their associate athletic director, Carl James, called me. I was actually on a recruiting trip to West Point. He said, why don't you just stop by? When I went on campus, I was so impressed with the beauty and the academic excellence, and they recruited me differently than other schools. They actually introduced me to the chairman of the history department and the dean of men, and there was much more of a focus on the academic side. Then, at that time, Duke played a big-time football schedule. They always played a Big Ten opponent, a Pac-10 opponent, and the Naval Academies were quite good then, and Duke had a great reputation as a powerhouse, which they were at the time. After the experience, I thought, well, you know, this is far enough away I can be on my own. I had been conditioned, I think, for so many years, believing I was going to go away. I think I felt, gosh, they've done so well without me. If they start losing, I might be a distraction.
Was his handwriting easy to read? Was it good handwriting?
Yeah, his penmanship. I do show one image at the beginning of the book so the reader can see, but he wrote much better than I do today. And one of the things we debated was whether to actually show his letters in the written word, because the penmanship is so good. But we decided not to. I think it's easier to read the print when it's typed than it is the letter itself. But that was something we debated.